It's not a tumor.
And now it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
It's not a 2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars.
No!
Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hello everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, after the death of his best friend, Fives breaks protocol and defies orders to dig up answers and discovers a hidden threat hidden in the brains of all clone troopers. There will be... grab some salsa and some guacamoles, because we're talking a lot about chips this week! We're talking about The Fugitive! How you doing, Chris?
Ay, caramba.
I thought of that earlier, and I was like, they talk about inhibitor chips a lot, and I was like, chips and salsa. How was your week? You got to see Dario this week, you
Yeah,
lucky
he just went home yesterday.
Lucky.
I can't give too many details because it's actually going to be chronicled in a crossover effort between Garage Sale Glow and Eat It and Beat It.
Ooh.
Because we got him some specifically Rochester food, and we got him some food that's, you know, not specifically Rochester, but good versions of the Rochester version. So all the garage sailing and flea market, and we put on our own little booth at the flea market together. And so all the flea market garage sale talk will be on Garage Sale Gloat.
And it sounded like you guys, I won't say any figures or anything, but you wrote me and it sounded like you guys did a good job.
Yeah, I did real good, especially considering it rained through both days that we needed to, like, be outside, but we managed to pull it off, and it just says if we do it next year when it's sunny, it could be really crazy.
Yay!
But yeah, we're going to have a crossover, so like at the end of the Garage Sale Gloat, if you want to find out, like, start getting some facts and figures of exactly what we did, then you have to listen to Eat It and Beat It, because we talk about that over our final dinner. So yeah, we're doing what the comics did, forcing you to listen to another podcast in this case to find out how it all came out.
You told Dario hi for me, right?
I did.
Okay, good.
I did. He wants to come there and buy you lunch sometime. So
yeah.
When he said lunch at the food court, he didn't mean you come out to the airport and eat at the airport.
Oh.
He meant he comes to your food court. That's how Dario operates.
That'd be really sweet too, because I don't have the most reliable car, and I doubt my car could make it all the way to Atlanta, that far south of Atlanta. My car does okay just making it to work, but when it actually comes to going to Atlanta, that's when my car is just
right.
Yeah,
you don't wanna push old Bessie too hard. Your car, I seem to remember you have a name for your car, don't you?
His name is Bob, and he's still my first car. I've had him since I was 16, and I'm 30 now.
You're one of the few people, most people, male or female, that I've known have named their car, given their car a girl's name.
Well, his name wasn't supposed to be Bob. When I got him, like, it's tradition in our family to name our cars, but I didn't want to call him Car until I thought of a better name, so I was just like, fine, I'll just call you Bob until I think of something better. And it stuck, so he's been Bob ever since I was 16.
Excellent. So now you know if you, like, go off the road into a lake, you'll probably float.
Ha!
Get it? Boy, we're piling up the good jokes on Jay Guys and Jedi today.
Actually, my coworker came up with the best zinger where we were joking around about Batman because that's what we do in a comic book store, and he was saying he was making a joke about Commissioner Gordon coming up to Bruce Wayne, and he goes, "I know you're Batman." He's like, "How do you know I'm Batman?" And he goes, "Because you have a farmer's tan from your nose to your chin." Because that's where the mask is exposed. And I never thought about that before.
But that's not a farmer's tan, though.
Well, it's a tan.
I know. I know what
from
it means.
From his nose to his chin.
It's just that joke doesn't stand up to pathetic nitpickers like me.
After.
Well, technically, a farmer's tan is.
Well, I'm going to cut you off because some cool, funny, hilarious fucking shit had dropped today.
Yeah, I saw that, and I don't know what's going on. You're going to have to explain to me what's going on. Because I saw that picture, and it looked like, a book was coming out, and then I saw that,
there,
and I'm like,
it is.
And I go, how'd that work? Picture on it. So you seem to be taking it humorously, so please explain to my idiotic brain.
There's a few things. Okay, so there is a new Thrawn book coming up in about a month where we are right now. Actually, less than a month. But by the time this episode comes out, it actually might be out by the time this episode comes out. It's coming out in July. It's called Thrawn Alliances. And what it is Vader and Thrawn are told to team up by Palpatine to go investigate something in the Outer Rim. And it's set between Rebels Season 3 and Season 4. Well, we already got the first excerpt from it, which is Palpatine telling them to team up. And we know it's set between Season 3 and Season 4 because there's a part where, Palpatine was like, "Hey, Thrawn, what was that Bindu thing?" And Thrawn was like, "I don't fucking know, man. No, I don't know what a Bindu is." So we know it's after Season 3, and Adelon just happened. Anyway, in the first Thrawn novel, in the opening, chapters, when they find Thrawn in exile, they bring him before the Emperor. And he tells the Emperor, I was hoping to meet this one general of yours because I met him during your Clone Wars. And he was like, "Well, what's that general's name?" And he goes, "His name was Anakin Skywalker, and I fought with him, and it was awesome. He was a really good leader, and I was looking forward to meeting him again." And Palpatine goes, "You left a big impression on Anakin, too, because he told me about you. So when I heard that they had captured you, I was hoping it was you." and they were like, "Oh, cool, so we're bonding over Anakin." And he's like, "Is Anakin still alive?" He's like, "Nah, man, but this is my brother Vader. This is my friend Vader." And Vader's just like, "Sup," knowing it's Thrawn. So that's all we knew about this. Well, the picture that Robert Bell sent me was the San Diego Comic-Con variant of the cover. Because the regular cover has just Thrawn in his Grand Admiral outfit with Vader behind him. They released today Thrawn in his Chiss uniform with Anakin behind him. First and foremost, holy God, does Thrawn... I'm looking at it right now. And it's the background of my computer and my phone right now. My God, does he look fucking beautiful in his Chiss outfit. And he must have gone to Callus because he has some hashtag hot Callus hair hanging down. Jeezy, crazy. I need 12 more of these. But so the picture that you saw was the San Diego Comic-Con alternate cover, which, please God, somebody buy me one. But what I was laughing at when we first started talking about this is they released their second excerpt from the book, but they also attached a bit of the audiobook to it. It was 9 minutes of the audiobook. My God, it's hilarious.
In what way? Is it badly done, or is it just
The guy who does the audiobook for it's the same guy that did the first Thrawn book, and he does a really good job. Well, pretty much what it is that when he voices Anakin, because I guess it's a flashback, because it has Anakin, not Vader, it's a flashback of how Anakin and Thrawn met. His Anakin is borderline almost our Anakin. It's close. It's like the way he's like, "I am Anakin Skywalker of the Galactic Republic." It's so close. So I was snickering the entire time. But so pretty much what it is Anakin is somewhere out in the boondocks, and he is just like, I gotta find Padme. Where's Padme? And he sees another ship that he's never seen before, just kind of floating near his hyperspace rings. So he's calling this ship, and he's just like, dude, get away from my ship. Hey, dude. Dude, and then he starts saying, then he says in Huddies, and then he says in another language, and finally this, like, obscure, like, random language that Anakin knows, this other person recognizes, and he's just like, oh, hi, sorry, I just have never seen one of these before, it's really cool, and Anakin's like, I am in the middle of a mission, I don't have time for you. He's like, well, maybe I can help you. I saw a ship crash over there on that planet. He's like, I don't need your help. He's like, but I have the coordinates of where where that ship crashed. He's like, fine. What's your name? And this is like actually a passage between in this fucking book. And he's like, well, my name is Mithron Utarodo, but I think it'll be easier if you call me my core name, Thrawn. And Anakin goes, I know how to pronounce long names, Mithron Utarodo. No, no, you're saying it wrong. It's Mithron Nuterodo. That's what I said. Mithron Nuterodo. No, no, you're saying it wrong. And they literally go back and forth for like 2 minutes in the audiobook trying to pronounce Thrawn's name. Till finally Anakin's like, whatever, let's go.
Whatever, Thrawno.
I was dying laughing because it was just like, Mithron Nuterodo. Mithron Nuterodo, that's what I said. No, 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 no. Mithron Nuterodo. That's what I said!
Yeah, it's like Apu Nahasapita Petalan.
I was actually thinking more Ron and Hermione. It's Leviosa. It was like incredibly smart Ron, or really, really smart Hermione with the dumbest Ron ever. Though, probably I think the part that was the coolest, though, was Anakin was feeling out with the Force, and he was trying to analyze who he is. And I just thought this was a really cool description, which was, but the textures of Thrawn's mind was unlike anything Anakin had ever touched before. It was neat and well-ordered, the patterns of thought flowing smoothly and precisely in ways not unlike those of scientists or mathematicians. But the content of that flow and the muted emotions accompanying it were completely opaque. It was like a neat and precise array of unfamiliar numbers.
Like the Matrix.
Yeah, it was just, oh my god, it was just... Oh, my other favorite line is, I suggest you address me by my core name, Thrawn. That's all right, Mithron Nuterodo, Anakin said. Did this being go out of his way to be annoying and condescending? I think I can handle it.
Damn!
It's just like, Anakin, you son of a bitch! I am so excited for this book. I cannot wait for it to come out. I'm actually pretty bummed because it comes out.
Now, are you gonna read the? It sounds like do you like reading the books better than the audiobooks?
You know, I usually do read books,
so it sounds like you might want to do both in this case.
That's what I did last time, because what I did with the audiobook last time is I would read a chapter, and then wherever I left off when I was like driving to work or something like that, I would just pick up where I left off in the audiobook.
Okay, that yeah.
And then I would just when I got home, and I would just then continue reading from wherever I left off on the audiobook. It's just that between buying the book and the audiobook together is like dropping $50.
Right, right.
So I don't know if I want to do that.
See, I just wait till they're at the second. I just got the novelization for Force Awakens and Rogue One in hardcover at our local used bookstore.
Yeah, I can't wait. I still want to read the Rogue One one, but I'm just so goddamn excited. I'm the only thing I'm really bummed about is it comes out the week after I'm on vacation, and I wish it came out a week sooner so I could just sit by the pool for like 5 days and just read.
I'm gonna have to hear that excerpt. That sounds suspiciously like they're listening to our show, Hope.
Yeah, I'll send it
to you
later.
Listens, the guy who does the audiobook probably listens to our show and just he's probably trying not to be just like, oh, Padme.
Padme. She, of course, Padme. But I will send it to you. It's at, I'll send you the article that was in because it's at the bottom of the
article.
It'll
have all the links on it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it just if you just go down to the bottom, you'll see a little audio clip at the bottom, and it's just really fucking funny. I just was dying laughing the entire time. But my God, someone please find me that Comic-Con version. What'd you like about? Did you like this week's episode?
I like this this week's episode quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I'm well. That's funny because Dario. I'm assuming. I think Dario's watched the whole Clone Wars. Knowing him, he has, and he was doing a little bit of just like, yeah, enjoying season six. Yeah, you're really gonna enjoy it. And I'm like, ooh. So what are you saying? It's gonna get good. I think it's already gotten good. So if it gets better than this, I'm gonna be like really excited this whole season.
Yeah, I'm excited to what you. There's one arc in particular I think you're gonna love, but I could see there's elements of it you might not love. So I'm really interested to see what you think about that arc.
Well, I was thinking about it, and I was like, it's almost like they took. It's a short season, and I was thinking, I wonder if they like just didn't produce the you know, it's the season where they took all the stories that directly relate to the storyline and didn't have any like side stories and side arcs that you know, like the little kids, you know, stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that's the stuff that didn't make it into this season. And so they just stuck to the, you know, it's, well, you know, three episodes in, it seems like the main theme is the clones and the Jedi starting to get a look at the chaos that's coming, to see that, you know, the cracks are starting, not just to show, but the cracks are starting to break open and stuff's starting to fall into them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
or awesome. Squeeze out of them.
Or drip out of the sides, yes. There's all sorts of stuff dripping and squeezing. Not yet, Yoda.
Though I have to say, this is one of my favorite platitudes, too.
yeah, we'll get to that.
Well, you ready?
I am ready.
Now that I got to talk about my blue husbando with his hashtag hot cow's hair. All right, here we go. Oh, I didn't change this. Fugitive, not conspiracy. Fugitive is the 111th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on March 7, 2014. It was written by Katie Lucas and directed by Danny Keller. So not a lot of extra information for you, because this arc hasn't had a lot of extra information in general. The inhibitor chip, as Nala Say describes it, is consistent with what Lama Su says to Obi-Wan Kenobi during his first tour of the cloning facility in Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, saying, "We modified the genetic structure to make them less independent than the original host. The chip was created to suppress individuality in the clones." And finally, in a quick cameo walking through the hallways of Tapaka City, and I missed this too, are the bounty hunter instructors Brick and L.S., the jerks who were mean to the Domino Squad way back in Season 3, Episode Clone Cadets. I missed them.
Did you really miss them?
No, I didn't, but I just missed them. I really did. Oh, man. Hi, Yoda.
Did you miss Yoda?
I did. I haven't talked to you in like 2 weeks. We took last week off.
Yoda took the time for solo review to have some Yoda solo review.
Oh. So, did you see Solo? Did you see Solo?
Yes.
What'd you think?
Yoda.
Not enough Yoda.
Yoda got kicked out. Yoda got.
Aww. That's okay.
First 10 minutes.
Oh, did you like to arrive on set and they kicked you out 5 seconds later?
No. Yoda really liked Worm Woman in beginning. Reminded Yoda of Mama, huh?
Ooh, and we already know that you'd be one of those parasites crawling all over Mama Hud's body.
Mm-hmm. Mustn't kick Yoda out of theater just because Yoda gets a little excited. Not fair it is. Not fair it isn't.
You have to go, like, on a matinee when there's nobody else there.
Mmm, disguise Yoda will wear. Nah, they won't know.
So how many theaters does this make that you've been kicked out of?
Yoda's not going to say. Star Wars episode. Clone Wars, yes.
More than I can count on my hands and my toes.
That's only up to 6 or 8.
That's a lot, Yoda.
Well, Yoda will have to count on something else also, then.
Maybe one to grow on?
No!
All right, what's the platitude this week?
When in doubt, go to the source. In bed!
I like that one.
I'm not really sure. I'm trying to figure out all the ways that can be interpreted.
That can go be interpreted in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it could be interpreted in sort of philosophical ways, and then it could be just interpreted in crass, disgusting, vile...
Oh, Chris.
...ways.
Something else that happened this week,
uh-oh,
and I just want to get your opinion. What do you think about these fanboys trying to raise $200 million to remake The Last Jedi?
Well... Wow. First of all, I don't believe it. I think it's just something, I don't know if it's something those particular people made up or if it's something somebody else made up they said they had the money. That's what it's like, we have the money and we have the producers here to ready to do it, you know.
But they haven't like named any of the producers yet.
Right, right. It really smells like bullshit to me, but let's assume that it's real.
On the
assumption that it's real, it's pathetic, and it will never happen, but I would love it to happen. I would say if you come up with the money and have the producers, and I was Disney, I would say, all right, step up, little kids, let's see what you got. Let's see what your better version of The Last Jedi is that is to your liking, you know. And I guarantee you, when they write that movie, it's not going to be like, let's sit down and, you know, figure out how to write the movie. It's going to be just like, let's do the opposite of what the movie did, you know. And it's going to be stupid. It's going to be them like, it would be, it's not going to be because it ain't going to happen, but it would be them just like airing their grievances through the movie, and it would be twice as preachy, you know. There would be twice as much messaging, quote unquote, in their movie than any other, you know, variation that they thought they watched of The Last Jedi. And I want to see it. I think it would be a cultural, anthropological experiment that would yield so much data. And
yeah,
it would probably be so awful and so entertaining. And it's like, I mean, are they offering, you know, are they going to pay all, they're going to get like John Boyega and Daisy Ridley and,
no,
you know, to come in and do the, you know, or Daisy Ridley's going to come in to get killed in the first 10 minutes or whatever they want to do, or... You know, they're gonna hire up Laura Dern again. You know, it ain't gonna happen. But boy, oh boy, what an incredible train crash it would be to watch. You know,
I have a few thoughts on it. Like, I kind of find it funny that Rian Johnson's like, please, 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 I want to see it.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. I totally, I'm
that.
With him.
But also, like, there's a couple things, and Seth Rogen pointed out a lot of this to them, which is like, who are these producers? Because your name producers is what gets people to back you. What you need to be able to pay your cast and crew. What are you going to be doing with your cast? Because Mark Hamill has already said he's not going to be a part of it. What would they do with Leia now that Carrie Fisher is gone? And you're also going to have to get the legal rights from Disney to make it.
Oh no! It would have to be a Disney production, you know. Disney would have to be so. It would have to be Disney would have to be down with the. That's why it's never gonna happen. Disney, You know, if Disney's not going to bring back the EU, you know, maybe they, you see, there's so many potentials of the, you know, would they write it to sort of, would they just sort of be like, okay, we got the movie, and then like make the movie so they could bring back all their favorite elements of the EU? It could be that, you know?
Well, the thing is like, Disney's already doing a lot to bring the EU. I mean, I saw somewhere like Solo alone had over 50 EU references in it, making them canon again. And it's just, like, they're not bringing back certain parts of the EU, but they're trying. And, they're like, that's where the TIE Defender came from. Look at Thrawn. I mean, like,
yeah,
they're trying.
And that's what I predicted they would do. I said they're going to toss it out, and they'll take the elements that they like, and they'll put them back in a way that fits in with the current configuration. And I mean, that's just smart. That's just good thinking, you know?
Also, I think if it does get made, I think it's going to be a $200 million version of Star Wars The Room.
Yeah. You don't want to see that? I want to see that.
I want to see it so bad.
Exactly. It's like having this annoying little kid that's just like sitting there, Dad's at the table doing quantum physics for his government job, and this little kid's going, Dad, let me do the quantum physics. You don't know how to do quantum physics. Yes, I do, Dad. Yes, I do. Fine. Solve this equation. And then he's going to just smear crayon all over the page. And that's what it's going to be. It'll be so, so fun to watch and so interesting. Imagine how many shows we'd have to talk about it. It would be...
I know. It's just because, like, there's so many fans, and fans all have so many different ideas about things. Fans don't really know what they want. And the thing is, you already have a thing to address something in a show or a movie that you don't like. It's called fan fiction.
That's too much work.
That's what fan fiction is for. That's what fan fiction is for. Write a good fan fiction. That's what it's for.
Get into the film business and work your way up to it. Work your up your way as a writer or producer and get a job with Lucasfilm.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what the people who made The Last Jedi did, just saying.
Yeah. You have to put in the time and the effort and the work. You can't just be like, I don't like this thing, so I'm going to remake it.
You did this wrong. I could do this better. Yeah, dude, but yeah, sure you could.
Yeah. It blows my mind, like, that I don't understand, because I guess what it is maybe I love Star Wars. Look, we're doing a podcast. We talk about Star Wars every week. I have 2 Star Wars tattoos. I have wall art. I have shirts. I have fucking Thrawn on my phone background and my computer. I write Thrawn fan fiction. I love Star Wars, but at the end of the day, and it means a lot to me too, don't get me wrong, if I think hard enough about Ahsoka Tano and what she means to me, I'll start crying. Like, it means so much to me. But at the end of the day, I understand that it's still just a movie and a TV show and a book. Like, I get that. There's no reason. And like, same thing happened with Once Upon a Time. There's a lot of things about Once Upon a Time I don't like. Like, season 4, God, I hated it. But at the same time, you can make a choice not to watch it. Just don't watch it. You don't have to be a fucking baby or chase Kelly Marie Tran off of Instagram. Just don't watch it. It's fine. It's not going to go anywhere. And that's the thing. Like, these people are constantly crossing a line and, like, harassing people and stuff over a movie, which I don't understand that. Because it means a lot to me. And it's one thing being like, I don't like this movie because of these, like, story elements. Or I thought the acting in this point was, like, constructive criticism. That's one thing. But just being like, I don't like it, so I'm going to bully Kelly and Marie Tran and remake the movie and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's just childish.
Yeah.
they're just being babies.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. All media is made for you.
Putting it mildly, it's kind of a loss of perspective.
Yeah, if you guys want to get mad about something, get mad about what's happening to the Muslim community over in Myanmar. they're being killed and kicked out of their homes, and it's a genetic cleansing.
No matter what your, you know, political or philosophical ideas are, there's a million things in reality with all of them that you could get involved with that will actually make more of a difference than getting upset about a movie, you know?
Yeah, I saw somewhere, like, I think it was in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, because I'm an old woman, I read the paper. Apparently, they already have $48 million, though there's no confirmation of where that money came from or right. if it's actually there. And I'm just sitting here going, do you know how much good in the world you can do with $48 million? Like, seriously, there are so many
Even if you just
others.
Sat down and just spent
Do you know
it on buying sandwiches.
Homeless people yeah. you could house and feed and put clothes on for $48 million.
$48 million. Hell, you could start a foundation with that $48 million and have that foundation.
You can give to childhood cancer research.
Right, right. $48 million would start something that could keep raising money and work for generations if it was good, you know, but... Or it could be the first 20 minutes of a really shitty Star Wars poorly written fan film.
Yeah.
Now, some of that, you know, that money will trickle back down into the economy, I guess. But, you know, it's not much as making it into sandwiches for the poor. That's for sure. I think it's bullshit. I think it's a good way to get publicity and to either I don't know if it's something that was started by the people who really hate The Last Jedi or people who want to make people who hate The Last Jedi not make them look bad, but to sort of point out how ridiculous the whole thing is. So I can't tell if it's, you know, if it's for real. You know, I'm sort of crossing my fingers behind my back that it is for real. I'd sort of think that would be really funny.
Yeah, like,
really,
honestly.
Really like to know who's put up the $48 million. Well, pardon me. I don't think. Now that I think about it, I think I would invest in that if I was a producer, maybe, because I think a lot of people would go to see it. You know, out of sheer curiosity, cultural curiosity.
Yeah, it'd be like The Room.
Yeah, except it would be The Room, but it would appeal. I think you could probably suck in 50 to 70% of Star Wars fans being like the whatever percentage hated The Last Jedi plus the ones that loved The Last Jedi who ought to watch the train crash. And that's a good number of people, although it might not be good enough numbers to justify a $250 million budget or something. I don't know. If they're thinking of not doing any of the Star Wars story movies right now, I don't think they're going to greenlight this thing, you know?
You know, I keep hearing back and forth about that on one hand, it was hearsay, and on the other hand, like, it's been confirmed by Lucasfilm that it was a lie.
Shouldn't be enough to make them... think about that, you know what I mean? And it's still pulling in a little money right now, so it's not like it's a studio buster. You're just gonna I wasn't really like too sure on how seriously I wanted to take that either. It might be a rumor they floated just to see what people's reactions were, you know?
Yeah. So now I'm looking at their page. Apparently, they already have $100 million, but I don't see any links or proofs to where
right,
that money
right.
is. I kind of want to just use my Twitter, our Twitter, and just be like, things I can do with $100 million, feed this many homeless people, put clothes on things, stuff like that.
Build the world's largest nerd complex.
But I wouldn't want to use our... they're only taking pledges right now.
I don't think that would be like political. I mean, if you're like, we could use that $100 million to, you know, campaign for this candidate, yeah, maybe. But, you know, feeding or housing the homeless is just the standard go-to of like, I could spend that money better, you know, when you're talking yeah. about something that takes up a whole, you know, do you know how many people you could feed for that? Or, you know how you could just pay off everybody's parking tickets in America with that. Think
yeah.
about it.
Because so far I only see, like, pledges. but I don't see any, like, proof of, like, actual money on their website.
Right.
Oh, my God. This is... I can't look at this. You want to talk about Clone Wars?
Yes. Let's talk about something... I was going to say something happy, but this isn't, like, a happy episode of Clone Wars.
I know. Wow. We're not even at Act 1 yet. You ready for Act 1?
Act 1.
Okay. Some crazy shit has gone down for real the last few weeks. In the middle of a battle, Precious clone baby Tup suddenly shot a Jedi Master, killing her. Everyone is freaking out, and I mean everybody. The good guys want to know if it's a clone virus. Papa Palpatine and Dooku are like, shit, Order 66 happened early! And they send Tup back to Kamino for examination. His best friend Fives goes with him, and in good old Fives fashion, he questions everything. The Kaminoans are being shady bitches, so Fives teams up with a medical droid named AZ-3. Together, they discover that Tup has a tumor in his brain. With Shaak-Ti on Fives' side, the evidence isn't destroyed by the Kaminoans. Sadly, Tup dies after the tumor is removed. Tup and the tumor, which would make a terrible TV show, by the way.
I actually was thinking... Just that before you actually, I saw the words written on the page.
I know. I typed it and I was like, that's a terrible name for a TV show. It's up in the tumor. We'll be sent back to Coruscant for examination while Fives is placed under arrest. On to this week! Fives is super upset over the death of his best friend, but ain't no one got time for that. Shaak-Ti and Nala Se come to his room with news from the Chancellor about the tumor being sent to Coruscant. Nala Se is like, maybe we would know more if you hadn't meddled in this, Fives. And Fives is like, I was trying to save my friend, bitch. And Nala Se sneers back, perhaps taking out the tumor is what killed him, clone. And Fives gets in her face, saying that Nala Se didn't care about Tup. They were going to kill him anyway and dissect him like a frog. And Shaak-Ti is like, oh my god, ladies, you are both pretty, shut up. And she wants the data and the tumor taken to the Jedi Temple, and not the medical facility that Palpatine said. And Nala Se tries to protest, but Shaak-Ti is like, bitch, did I stutter? It's going to the Jedi Temple first, and then you can do anything you want with it. My word is final. And Nala Se reluctantly agrees to it. Fives is to be escorted for one more physical exam to pass before he can go back to the 501st. When he looks back, he sees that Nala Se has the case with the tumor in it and switched it with an empty case. Going down the hallway, Fives sees his droid friend, AZ. AZ asks if Fives will be reprogrammed as well. After he says he's gone back to the front lines, AZ says, I heard that your mind will be wiped and you're going to be the new 99 here. And Fives busts out his greatest hits by punching out all the clone troopers and fighting his way out. And AZ is like, what are you doing? And Fives grabs him and they run away. Sliding back into the medical room, Fives grabs the tumor out of the case and they book it out of there as the alarms go off. Casually walking into the hangar, Fives knocks out a pilot and steals his ship as Shaak-Ti and the platoon of clones arrive. Fives and AZ fly out over the waters, but it's a decoy. He sets the ship to autopilot and they jump out into the ocean. AZ flips his body around into a watercraft, and hopping on, Fives pilots him back towards the city to investigate Tup's death. What'd you think of Act 1?
I liked it. I liked how it, because I was sort of just assuming once in the last episode they said, Palpatine wants it taken to, I was like, oh, that's it, you know, that's the, and that was the end of the episode. I figured that meant it just went over there. And I like that it sort of picked up where that left off, to where it's like, oh, maybe not, they're not, you know, they smell a rat and they're not gonna let it get there, you know, get to them before the Jedi have a chance to, like, actually see what's going on with it. So I thought that was really cool. And my notes are kind of frivolous or nitpicky in this episode, and I just want to say ahead of time, that doesn't mean they're just very little nitpicks. I'm not really bitching about this show because I really love this episode. But most of my notes would be just like, this is awesome, this is awesome. Which I'll say that stuff, but I don't need notes to do it. So all my notes are sort of like, either just sort of like comments, like in this one is a mind eraser ain't just a drink in Star Wars, har, har, har. And I wonder if AZ, when he was like, I heard they're gonna wipe your mind, if he was sort of giving him a heads up or if he was just clueless and do it. And
I think he's clueless because he's been pretty clueless this entire time.
But he has been, so he has sort of that, you know, they've sort of established a relationship of skullduggery together. So I was sort of hoping there would be a little bit of him that was, you know, looking out for Fives. But either way, I like how I like that Fives does a rowdy Roddy Piper and just doesn't mess around. As soon as he gets, he doesn't go, is this true that you're gonna wipe my mind and give them a chance to go? Oh no, we're not gonna wipe your mind. Here, just go to sleep. Here, he immediately acts, and I like that.
Mm-hmm. I have to wonder what the other clone troopers leading him think about hearing that.
Yeah, you know. almost everything that's going on here is just something that's just, it's almost like the seeds of doubt are just sort of, you know, are taking root everywhere, you know, and you can't cover it up completely and contain it because, yeah, all those troopers saw that going on around, you know, and were overhearing that. And that's just a small number, but it's happening more and more in different places with the Jedi and with the clone troopers.
Yeah.
From the inside and the outside, the Jedi are, you know, suspicious of each other and whoever's coming after them. And the public is suspicious of the Jedi and the clones by extension. And, yeah, everything's just getting really... really messy, and I love it. And it's this great time period sort of thing of stuff that they just had to gloss over in the movies because you only have 2 hours to tell the story. And, you know, we already know about Order 66, but I, you know, a sort of, you know, nagging idea that a lot of people had after seeing Episode 3 was, did, you know, how exactly did Order 66 work? I mean, you knew that something, you know, something was programmed in the clones so Palpatine could do that. And the shading that they're putting on this is, once again, like we always say, enhancing the movies. And it had enough room, and I don't know if they developed this. I don't think when they were developing the movie they were looking to do this, but they used what they had for the Clone Wars. It developed enough room so that they can do really interesting stuff with it without messing up the storyline. You know, they're not so constrained that they just have to do some stupid story and nothing can develop from it. You can't, you know, normally you would think if they found out about a secret chip and biological chip inside of a clone, that you, by the end of that arc, basically the only people that really knew about it were dead or, you know, on the side of evil. But it ends up just being a little nod to the viewer where the viewer goes, oh, you know, maybe, you know, that could have gone further or something, but we just saw a little incident out of it. But no, this is like got the total flavor of things getting busted wide open. You've got Jedi who are starting to smell a rat and a rogue clone, and it's just going all out of control, and I love it. And I love how he rides AZ just like a droid cycle.
I know.
Hey, buddy. Let me ride right on my back. Have you ever I know you haven't seen this movie because it's such an obscure little, like, you know, blurb of a movie from the 80s, but the movie Cabin Boy with Chris Elliott?
I have not.
there's a scene of Chris Elliott writing his girlfriend. He can't swim, and he's writing his girlfriend very much like he's writing AZ. And then my only other note is the water in this is like one of the big things that you see that does show the limitations of the CG animation at this period in time. I mean, in this period of time, they could do better water effects, but water effects are expensive, so they could only go so far. So you could tell there's like a layer of the water and then a layer on top of it of like the, you know, whatever effect they're having on the water and stuff. So it's a little artificial looking, but there's just no way you'd be able to spend the money on a TV show.
I have to say, though, a lot of the lighting is like, there's a lot of lighting that's like a streak of light over Fives' eyes. That happens a couple times in the episode where he's standing in shadows, but there's a beam of light over his eyes.
Yes.
Later on, when he's in the tunnels with AZ, he's wearing his clone trooper mask, but there's a light of beam of light over just his eyes. There's a lot of great lighting in this episode.
Yes, yes. But once again, that's just a little nitpick. That's all I got for notes for part one. I was really happy with this one because I thought we were just sort of ending that little era of it, and it's like, nope, Fives is going full deep throat on this one. He's gonna take out the Watergate burglars.
So I took a little side note while you were talking. I did a little bit of math.
Okay.
There's a website I've been following, which is DEC, which is the Disaster Emergency Committee. And they've been following what's been happening to the Rohingya people in Myanmar. And the Rohingya people are considered the most hated people in the world. And pretty much, long story short, in Myanmar, there's a situation of ethnic cleansing where they're pushing the Muslims out of there, making them refugees. And it's like over a million refugees have lost their homes, and they're trying to pretty much burn their villages so they have nothing to come back home to. I did the math. For the $100 million apparently they raised to remake The Last Jedi, they could, just going off the DEC website, they could provide over 3 million homes with that money. 3 million homes. And they could provide over 1 million meals with that money for 2 families for a month.
Just that sounds about right.
Yeah, perspective, guys. Like, come on. Sorry. I was thinking about that as you were talking, and I was like, I have a website where you can actually donate money to help people. A million meals.
$100 million of the theoretical money that they'll never ever raise for real.
I know. And I'm just like, really? Ugh, perspective. Okay, let me actually go back. I had to do the math while you were talking because I was thinking about it. So good notes, Chris. I heard like half of them. I'm so sorry. I was distracted trying to figure that out. I assume you said something about Order 66 and clones are getting skeevy about Jedis and the water looks fake. Did I miss anything?
No, that's pretty close, yeah.
Yes. It was like I was listening to a podcast while doing math.
That's what happens whenever I talk to someone on Skype who listens to our podcast for the first time, like, I'll talk to them, and there's, like, after the first time I'm done talking, there's often a long pause, and they go, oh, I'm sorry, it's not natural for me to respond to what you're saying.
I think that happened to us a few times during our 100th episode.
Yeah.
All right.
I wonder how many people, like, if they didn't hear what we said or didn't quite catch it, were, like, trying to, like, rewind a little bit.
Yeah. All right, well, my notes for Act 1. Fives isn't wrong calling out Nalase for being shady and wanting to kill Tup from the get-go.
No.
Because he doesn't know if his actions killed his friend, but at least he was trying to help.
He doesn't know what she's up to, but his instincts are dead on.
Yeah. And I know that Fives isn't the most trusting person, because we've seen him for, like, 6 seasons turn into a not trusting person. So he does have reasons to be wary of those in charge, because we saw what happened with Krell. But Shakti is one of the few Jedi who's has always been in Fives' corner. And I don't see why he didn't, when he saw them switching up the cases behind Shakti, that he didn't go, oh, hey, you grabbed the wrong one. Here, it's the other one. Just so Shakti could be like, what? What are you doing over there? Like, just very casually be like, oh, you grabbed the wrong one. It's the other one. Shakti, they grabbed the wrong case. Make sure you get the right case.
Pardon me, that's true. I'm sorry, I was trying not to cough.
Yeah, I feel like Shakti is one of the few Jedi that, like, Fives still has a really good repertoire with. So, like, he didn't have to be like, Shakti, they switched up the cases. He could have just been like, oh, you grabbed the wrong one. Make sure you get the right one. Okay, bye.
Well, like I was saying in the last episode, she seems really reserved, you know, as a personality. And in this one, and on top of that, she smells a rat too, and she is definitely playing her cards really close. So she's sort of a Jedi a few words in these last couple episodes. So she's hard to read, you know. She's trying not to show her hand to the Kaminoans, and if she's too much like on Five's side, that might, you know, she's trying to, you know, play both sides and keep it under control, with basically the end goal of being like getting that, well, she thinks it's a tumor at this point, back to the Jedi so they can figure out what's going on before it can get covered up.
She's very much playing it like a Jedi. Do you think that she's playing it too much like a Jedi?
No. I think out of necessity she's doing that, because the goal would be to get out of there with that tumor. Otherwise, you're going to get nothing except for intuition. You'll have no information to go on about what's going on, except for whatever it is that Palpatine's people tell you, or the Kaminoans. And, you know, she's for sure picking up that the Kaminoans are shady. But, you know, if you're Columbo, you know the Kaminoans could be shady for a number of reasons. You know, it could just be like they're worried about their business or something, or worried that they cut corners on something and you're about to find out. Who knows? But she definitely is not giving off too many vibes to anybody, because she doesn't want Fives or the Kaminoans to sort of know where her allegiance is, you know. So which is good. That gives her way more options. And the Kaminoans don't seem to be the most empathic, intuitive people. So that, you know, they might just not pick up that she's even, you know, suspicious of them.
You know, the Kaminoans, actually have cloned themselves. Like, that's how they got to this point, because they had to clone themselves out of necessity. Because originally, Kamino was, like, not a flooded water planet. It used to have, like, mountains and stuff like that. But after it flooded, they had to build these cities on top of, like, what was left of their mountains. And so, out of necessity, they had to clone themselves so they wouldn't die off.
So that's why they're the best cloners in the world. That's a nice backstory.
Yeah, so they probably, and that's been happening for a while now, so they probably cloned a lot of, like, what they saw as weakness out of their system.
Yeah, but who knows? Who knows, and that depends on what the Kaminoan culture takes as weakness. They could have cloned some really good, useful stuff out of them. That might explain why they're kind of weird and off.
Yeah.
And they sort of look like Greys, and that's always been one of the conspiracy theories of Greys, is that they're humans from the future who are coming back to get, who've screwed up their genetics, and they're coming back to get some good old-fashioned human genetics
What's a Grey?
Gray aliens, the you know, your standard almond-shaped eyed.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was like a specific thing.
The Grays, man.
I wasn't sure if it was like from like Close Encounters or something.
Yeah, no, the Close Encounters alien. I don't think they called them Grays in Close Encounters. I don't think they call them by any name, but the Close Encounters aliens are like the stereotype of like a gray alien. Yeah.
Yeah. A little follow up note to Shaak Ti though. I am 99.9% sure that Shaak Ti did not know that Fives' mind was about to get wiped.
No, I don't think so. I don't think she was playing it that close. You know what I mean? She'd play it that close that she'd be just like, yeah, go ahead. I guess he'll just have to get his mind wiped.
I think she's like 100% like thought they were going to run a physical and then send him back to the 501st. I don't think she was just like, yeah, wipe his mind. That'll be fine. My next note is Fives is an ARC trooper, which means he has more training than like the standard clone. And it's just so awesome watching him take out an entire platoon all by himself.
Yeah.
That's why, to quote Rex from two episodes ago, that's why he's the ARC trooper. I also just really like AZ's and Fives' little friendship. It's really sad to me that a droid of all things treats Fives more like an individual than anybody else in Kamino. And he actually took the time to learn Fives' name and make sure he says the name correctly. Because he has that moment where he's like, oh, hello, Fives.
Yeah. Well, Fives actually, like, taught him, you know?
Yeah. And, like, Fives just, like, actually really likes and respects AZ. And they make a really nice team together.
Especially when Fives is riding on his back like a horse.
Yeah. So I actually, like, I think, like, it's been really short. I mean, it's, like, what, last episode and this episode? And they did a really good job establishing, in a very short amount of time, this friendship between them. It's really done well. And, like, that's a good way of how to get this, a friendship like this, in a small amount of time, established. And my last note is I just really like AZ's water design.
Yeah.
It's just really cool. I like that sequence, so...
In that scene, he reminds me a little of the robot they used to have on the Fantastic Four cartoon back in the old days.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
I don't remember the name of the droid, but he was like their little mascot on the like 60s or early 70s cartoon.
But I blank it out because I cannot stand Reed Richards. Reed Richards is one of those characters if I never had to see his dumb fucking face again. I love Dr. Doom and I like the rest of the Fantastic Four, but I can't stand Reed Richards. Like, my ideal would be like to put him in a metal box and then slowly lower the box ever so slowly down into a volcano so he either slowly cooks alive or he starts melting through the holes and he slips out into the lava.
I mean, yeah, I respect your opinion, Hope, but I'm just surprised. I've never met or heard anybody who that's their character that they hate with a passion.
He's a murderer. His wife deserves to leave him multiple times. Though, I will say, my very first exposure to Reed Richards was Civil War. And, of course, he creates a Thor bot that goes out and murders somebody. And then he doesn't care what Susan's thoughts are, and she leaves him. Like, I did not have a really good first experience with Reed Richards. And everything I've given him several tries. And every time I've tried it, he just has never done anything for me. And it just, right. I can't with Reed Richards.
I value your opinion, Hope, but, you know. You can judge Reed Richards, but you're okay with Will Wheaton, but that's okay.
Hey, that's fine. You're the one that came up with Will Wheaton being a baby killer.
Baby killer, yeah. See, you're fine with the baby killer.
Well, there's a difference. No. There's a difference because one's a fictional character, one's a human living person.
Yeah. So like, baby killer.
I always use this example with, say, like Bryce Harper. I'm not a Washington Nationals fan, and I don't like Bryce Harper. That being said, I would never want any harm to befell him because he's a living human being, because he's a person that lives and breathes and has a family and stuff.
Right. But kills babies.
But Reed Richards is a fictional character, so I can, like, plan his death and demise.
How many babies has a sports guy killed and eaten and kept the rest of the remains in his fridge? Probably none.
I'm going to go on to Act 2.
Act 2.
But that's the difference. One's a fictional character, one's a real person, and that's the difference. Like, I would never wish harm on Will Wheaton because he's a human being that's alive, but Reed Richards is not a human being, so I can plan his death. His elaborate, slow death. All right. I understand that characters and people are different.
Huh?
I understand that characters and people are two separate things. People chased Kelly Marie Tran off of Instagram. Oh my God. I'm on a soapbox tonight, man.
You're on a hope box.
I'm on a hope box tonight.
I like that. Get up on your hope box. That's the name of a podcast for whenever you want to rant.
I was actually thinking about doing a 5-minute freak about this whole remake of The Last Jedi and of them possibly canceling the movies. I was considering doing a 5-minute freak.
Do it.
Well, no.
Or give it a couple days to cool down and see if you still want to do it. But I would
This was a few days ago, so I mean, I'm also kind of waiting to hear like confirmation on a couple of things.
You might be waiting a long time.
Yeah. So, all right, Act 2.
Act 2.
Nalase calls Dooku to tell him that 5 stole the inhibitor chip. Dooku is not happy that Tup malfunctioned, and now 5 has these independent thoughts and feelings. He wants to make sure that the other clones will live up to Order 66. Or are they too independent now? Nalase says the clones will work. She blames the Jedi for making the clones have independent thinking. She will find the chip and 5's for Dooku, and they hang up. 5 scooters back into the city and sneaks inside. AZ lures a trooper inside the storage room where 5 knocks him out and steals his armor. They head to the genetic hall where every being that has ever been cloned is stored. Hold on. Sorry. Where they have every being that's ever been...
tight. I had to get to my mute.
No, it's fine. Oh, thank you. I mean... Every being that has ever been cloned is stored in this genetic hall thing. They compare Tup's tumor to Jango Fett, and they find that Fett didn't have a tumor like that, so it wasn't a clone. A clone effect. Plus, the tumor isn't fully organic, and it was implanted in Tup's brain. Upset, Fives rips off his helmet because Boo can't keep his emotions in check. And he realizes that someone did this to Tup. At the control room, Nalase and Shakti realize the ship 5 stole was a decoy. They get word someone is accessing Jango's files, and they head to the genetic hall to have the genetic hall evacuated quietly. But 5 notices and heads up the emergency access hatch, just as Shakti and the clones arrive. They seal the door and hurry away, but they still need more answers. They don't know how the chip was implanted in Tup or when, and AZ says it's dangerous. Tup died. Oh, because I skipped a line. When it was implanted in Tup or when, blah, blah, blah. But they need to find out, and Fives wants to know if that chip is in him too. If it is, he wants it to be taken out. And AZ says it's a dangerous surgery. Tup died after his chip was removed, meaning that Fives might die too. But Fives' freedom is worth more to him, and he braves hearts it. But without the dying, because I don't know. Reluctantly, AZ...
torn into sections, yes.
Yeah, reluctantly, AZ agrees to do the surgery. They sneak into a medical room, and AZ starts the procedure. What did you think of Act 2? Am I sneezing? Am I skipping lines and not being able to read correctly?
I like that when Dooku shows up, he's being referred to as Darth Tyrannus.
Yeah.
Finally, in this, I just like that there's people referring to a Darth Tyrannus. This part is where I was like, ooh. There's little nitpicks that are like things that bother me. Like, how do you keep with bare hands? How do you punch out clones or punch out troopers when they're in their helmet and armor?
The mask would still hit them in the face.
Armor is like padded and shock absorbent and stuff. It seems like that's why you have it on, is so someone can't just walk up and punch you out. But that's, you know, just a minor.
To quote Rex, that's why he is the ARC trooper.
That's true.
He probably knows exactly where to punch to knock out a clone.
And I'm just... This also is showing the seeds of into the, you know, the original trilogy, where it's not addressed in the original trilogy, but by the original trilogy, stormtroopers are not clones, and they're showing the beginnings of that in this, you know, where Tyrannus/Dooku is like, oh, you sure these guys this is an isolated incident and not a endemic, you know, flaw to the clone brain, you know. So now you're seeing everybody's seeing the cracks. Even the Sith are like, yeah, maybe clones aren't the best way to go in the future. You know, it might be a little bit messy. And Fives is just proving that, because he's going full. I love it now. He's a full renegade clone. And now, you know, we're getting... You know, post-Krell in this season, now, like, renegade Jedis and renegade clones are starting to be, like, a little more feasible and are starting to happen.
Can I point something out that probably helped Dooku and Palpatine get to this point?
Yes.
Okay, guys. Spoiler for the Darth Vader comic, the last issue of the Mon Cala arc. So if you have not read that issue, just FYI, I'm about to spoil it, so skip ahead a few minutes. Ready? Starting now. So in the very last issue of the Mon Cala arc, the whole thing is Vader is coming to Mon Cala to quell it, and he's brought his Inquisitors with him. And it's actually really cool because you know how in Rebels there's only 3 Inquisitors plus the Grand Inquisitor? Well, this time around there's like 12 of them, and we actually get to see what happens to some of them. Well, Vader has his Death Troopers with him, and they're hunting a rogue Jedi. BT Dubs, this Jedi is an asshole. It's great. I love it. But he realizes while fighting these Inquisitors with these Death Troopers, there's something off about these troopers, and he uses the Force to remove their helmets, and they were the last batch of clones that left Kamino, so they never executed Order 66. So he uses the Force to execute Order 66, and these clones turn on the Inquisitors and start shooting at them.
Ooh.
It's awesome. It's so good. And I'm sure that was a thing that made them go, maybe we shouldn't use the clones.
Yes, yeah, that could be a flaw.
Because any clones that didn't have that activated in them, it's just floating around in their brain and they could be activated on Vader or someone.
And now my last one is just a little nitpick. Does it come from the writing? Because, man, Katie Lucas is getting good.
Yeah.
But she's just getting better as she goes along. But when they pull up Jango's genetics, where our genetics are best, why does it have a picture of Jango in his armor? You know? You'd think you would see, you know, like, Jango Fett.
Maybe it's what he showed up in.
I guess so, but that doesn't...
It's all the clothes he owned on Kamino, which we know is not true because we saw him wearing other clothes.
You saw him in his street clothes. That's what you would think you would see, so you could see his face and facial features. It's like, here's the person we based the clones on in armor that completely covers him. As a matter of fact, here's a picture of Mandalorian armor, you know?
Do you think Boba has this chip in his head? I'm thinking no.
No, Boba is Boba. They made it. They made a point in episode 2 to say when he agreed to be the template for the clones, that what part of his price was Boba, and Boba was to be just like
a regular boy.
Yeah, a first generation copy of him. You know,
that's what I thought. I couldn't remember.
So Boba Fett really is basically genetically Jango Fett, you know.
He's the counter Fett.
Yeah. Oh.
I've used that joke before.
That's actually really good, but I'm still giving it a... Oh.
I've used that joke before on the show. He's the counter Fett. Go on.
Oh, that's it. That's all the notes I've got. You just took all, yeah. All of my will to live away, hope.
Usually
go on,
you do
let's
that.
Hear your notes, Hope. Maybe I can think of a pun
no,
by the
a
end of it.
This is a fun game. Usually you do this to me, Mr. Will Wheaton Baby Killer, so this is a fun game.
I'll try to think of some pun by the
I
end
I like this game.
Will kill your spirit.
Anyway, okay. I want to get my little notes out of the way first. Fives is just so smart and wonderful all the time, and I love him. What I love about Fives is so much is how his individuality is so much more important to him. Because, I mean, individuality is important to Rex, too. But Fives is, like, willing to die to have this chip taken out of his head. Because his freedom from this thing outweighs everything else. And
he's
I think that's
always been the rebel clone.
Yeah. And I think that's just so telling about him, because I feel like if it was, say, like Cody in this position, Cody would be like, well, it's not keeping me from functioning, and you put in every clone to help us fight this battle, sure, let's keep it. Meanwhile, Fives is like, it's suppressing our emotions, take it out. So I've always loved that about Fives.
Hey, that made me think of something. You think Rex might be, like, Rex's characteristics, like, all these other, Fives, and so they all sort of have exaggerated, so one thing that's not exaggerated, but is a little on the forefront of their personality. Do you think Rex might be the guy that's kind of, that just sort of hit that right balance where he's got a little bit of, just enough of, Fives rebellion and
Cody following orders.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to think of the name of the guy who ended up getting like hauled off for court martial that was a super
that was Slick.
Slick? What was the one Slick?
Traitor clone?
Who is the one who is a super rule into the rules?
That was Cutler Quain.
No, his name was definitely, like, something, to do with his standing by the rules and regulations.
Dogma.
Dogma, yes, thank you. I could not remember his name.
That's okay, I'm the clone dictionary over here. I think so, and you want to know why? Because of two reasons. One, they set out to make Rex, like, the perfect clone. Two, he's a main character. Of course, he has
right.
all these things.
Right.
But, I mean, thinking about it, like, when we get to Rex and Rebels, we know in Rebels that he took his chip out. And I feel like in Clone Wars, we're constantly seeing Rex in battle, so he's always, like, at his job, quote-unquote. But I feel like in Rebels, we're seeing, like, him retired and more cut loose. But I do have to wonder, like, once he took that out, I'm wondering if his personality might have loosened up a little bit. I have to wonder about that because he didn't have that.
That could be very possible.
Yeah, because I think Rex now couldn't imagine ever fishing for Jupas, while Rex in the future is like, yeah, let's shoot stuff. Bring on your stormtroopers. Yeah. Like, he's a lot more, like, free-spirited, but I'm wondering, and I wonder if that's after he took that out, if it kind of freed that part of his personality a little bit. Because Rex is way more fun-loving, and he laughs a lot in Rebels. I was thinking about that earlier, because, like, there's the scene where Kanan and Rex are wearing Stormtrooper outfits, and Ezra shoots them, thinking they're Stormtroopers, and Rex goes, "You shot us!" And Kanan's like, "Why are you laughing?"
Well, also, the Rex we meet in Rebels has had way more life experience than he ever had in Clone Wars. I mean, how old was he in Clone Wars? He was 10 years old, basically, right?
Yeah, then probably 13 by the end of the series. And 13, that's the other thing. He's had 20 years
so then
of
he's
retirement.
Like in his 40s,
Yeah, he's had 20 years of retirement. So.
Right.
So he'd be about 60. So I do think a lot of it is like he's been in retirement and all this other stuff. But I do have to wonder if when he took out his chip, if it freed up some of his personality as well.
He spent like 3 times longer being not in the employ of the Jedi in the war than he actually did,
Yeah. My other shallow note, before I get into my two big notes for this act, is, man, I wish we had more Star Wars technology to do major brain surgery in a few minutes.
Yeah, right.
Without making
a real incision, just sort of like pulling it out intact through the skull and skin. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah, come on, Star Wars technology.
And just having robots, random robots floating around that are just sort of capable of doing that on demand.
The robot part I would have trouble with, but yes. All right, so my two big notes. Yeah, I got a new phone this week, and I definitely turned off Siri first and foremost. The guy in the AT&T store was like, and this is how you turn off Siri. And I was like, no, don't turn it on. Like, no AI on my phone, thanks. Anyway. My first big note is, it's a real threat to Dooku and Palpatine that the clones over the course of the show have become so independent, because that really does put Order 66 in danger. Though we mostly see it through the eyes of the 501st clones, and we know them best, and we know that they work under Anakin, and he's not the most normal Jedi, but we have seen other clones from other squads, like Waxer and Boyle when they were working with a little girl, Numa, or we saw Wolf with his sassy rolling eyes and stuff, who all have very different personalities of their own, but even then, they're more like Cody still than they are like Fives and Rex.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if the 501st is the most different of out of all of them. But because there's a lot going on with them, and they're under Anakin.
Well, yeah, they're under Anakin, and they have a lot of shared experiences that could have all, you know, so they have a lot of the same, they're almost like twins. Mm-hmm. They're just like slightly off twins, all under Anakin, all in the same sort of battles and stuff. It would make sense that, you know, that they wouldn't develop exactly the same, but along the same lines, you know. Maybe they wouldn't do the same things, but they'd have similar bents, you know, mm-hmm. to each other.
Yeah.
That might be in their programming to sort of absorb, you know, what their somebody who's their superior does and take it to heart, you know.
Yeah, because like we saw from like Mace Windu's clones, they're pretty much follow straight up orders and just kind of they're all out like Windu. But like even with Waxer and Boyle, they were an Obi-Wan squad and they had a little bit of different variation than say from someone like Wolf. But even then, those two are, while they are very different, are still closer to Cody than they are to Rex in Fives. So I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
And my final note is kind of a long one. Nalsei says that it's the Jedi who inspired creative thought in the clones. And I started thinking, how different would this show be if we didn't have episodes like the very first one, Ambush, where we had Yoda tell the clones up front that they're individuals, or have Plo Koon help save Wolf's life from the Malevolence arc because the clones were important to him. And I have to wonder, if this war went on longer and the Jedi had more time to influence the clones, would more and more clones become so individualized and free-thinking that Order 66 would not have worked as well?
I think very, very possibly yes, and that's why stormtroopers aren't clones. One of the reasons why.
But also on the flip side, we're seeing clones like Fives, like finding out all this stuff about the Jedi and starting to question the Jedi more and more. So would it also have the reverse effect as well, where the more time, and that he's already gone through people like Krell, like. I think, like, it'd be half and half. Like, half the clones would always, like, be more trusting of the Jedi, while there'd be other clones with time going, the Jedi aren't that great, and this war sucks.
Yep.
But, yeah, I think the more and more individualized they are, the more and more... Because we saw that in the Kanan comic. And I can't remember if I talked about this last week or the week before, but in the Kanan comic, after Order 66, one of the clones snaps out of the Order 66 programming, and he's like, oh my god, Caleb's our friend. Why are we trying to kill him? And he questions it. So I think the more and more they spent time with the Jedi, the more and more it would have put Order 66 in jeopardy if this war went on longer than 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of falling apart quickly right now, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in this season, so you know, A few more years, yeah, for sure. And
we even saw it in last season. I mean, look at the clones that served in the military under Tarkin. They were nothing like the 501st. Yeah. Like, they were not giving Anakin privileges.
And this is a story of one isolated clone at misfiring, and we're seeing the just, like, domino effect, like, splitting domino effect of how just that one clone that I mean, you're not going to keep it too quiet, especially in Jedi circles, because he killed a Jedi. And and that just that one clone, it's going to have a ripple effect of chaos, you know, as we're seeing. It's starting in this episode, and I'm assuming that the rest of the season is going to have more ripples coming off, if not directly off this, but we're just watching the crumbling. The crumbling.
Yes and no. After next week's episode, we start touching base with other things that's happening. But there is an Anakin Padme arc, which very much is like, and we're shoving Anakin towards Vader.
Right.
Even more. So, like, I would say probably not the crumbling around the clones, but the crumbling more of the Republic and the Jedi. And so, yes. So, yes and no. Not more crumbling of the clones after next week, but definitely more crumbling of the Republic and the Jedi in the source of the show. So yes and no.
I see. Said the blind man.
I'm actually kind of on the fence about that Anakin arc, too, because if I remember correctly, I like and dislike it, but at the same time, I'm like, I have only seen it once, and that was 3 years ago, so I actually don't remember a lot about it. So I'm actually really excited to get to that because I can't remember how much I actually really like that set of episodes. I remember Imbo's in it, and that's all I care about. Like, Imbo!
That's the good thing about this show is, like, you could be sitting around and have that thought and be like, I gotta watch that episode again, but having this show actually means, don't worry, you're gonna watch that show again. It's coming up.
I mean, the hardest thing right now is I've been really, really, really wanting to rewatch a lot of Rebels, but I know that we're getting to Rebels soon, so I don't want to rewatch Rebels.
I've had the same dilemma. I've had the exact same dilemma. I've thought to myself, like, after watching Solo, you know, and seeing spoiler in there, I was just like, I really really want to check out, you know, since I've just gotten a good dose of it in Clone Wars, and Clone Wars is almost over. I want to check out the, you know, what happened with that in Rebels. And then I was like, yeah, it won't be too long before you're going to do that. So just sit down there, buckaroo.
Yeah, because, like, the biggest thing is my best friend, Megan, she's watching Clone Wars for the first time with her husband. But she's the one that I'm beta reading her Thrawn fan fiction, and she's my beta for my Thrawn fan fiction. By the way, Mr. Paul C. Kelly asked a link for my fan fiction, so I hope he is enjoying it. She also read the Thrawn novel, and I want her to watch a little bit of Rebels with her, like the first few episodes of Rebels with her, but I also just know that we're going to be watching Rebels soon, too.
Just write your notes on it already. Get way ahead of the game. Just, you know, a year from now or however long from now it is before you get to
we should reach Rebels by long.
But, you actually, know, you open up your book and see your notes from when you watch it and just like, oh, geez.
I mean, we should reach Rebels. We might not because, let's see, we're going to do some math.
We'll be covering all the interim stuff, and we'll be, like, doing wrap-ups, and then we'll have our whole commentaries and stuff. But, yeah, still, inside of a year, we will be doing Rebels for sure.
18. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. We're going to be wrapping up once we do also the unfinished episodes. We'll be finishing Clone Wars in October. give a few weeks of us doing wrap-up stuff for Clone Wars in between. So we'll be, and then holiday stuff. Yeah, so we'll be,
We'll be just squeaking through. Yeah, but that's,
And then holiday stuff in November.
Months. In the next 6 months, we'll be hitting Rebels.
We'll be doing Rebels, starting, actually that falls nicely. We'll be finishing doing Rebels probably right at the beginning of the year.
I know, we've been having really good luck with stuff sort of working out like that, with the whole December sort of free-for-all that we do, so yeah.
All right, well, act three, let's wrap this baby up.
Yes, ma'am.
And it's a good baby to wrap up because there's clone babies in this arc. All right, back in the main control room, Shaak Ti is starting to realize that Fives is searching for something. He never had an intention to escape. Meanwhile, Fives wakes up from his surgery. AZ did find another chip in Fives. His is still intact, but Tup's had malfunctioned. They don't know if Tup's chip was an isolated case, and they also don't know if by removing Fives' chip, if he will be alive too. These are all unprecedented cases for the clones. AZ believes that the chip was implanted in Tup and Fives when they were embryos. They go to find their answers. They sneak through the kids' training zone, passing Kaminoans, but they're not actually acting normal enough, and the Kaminoans call them in. Lamassu gets the call and sneaks away, but Shaak Ti sees that shady bitch. In the baby clone room, baby clones, guys! Towers of baby clones! Man. Fives and AZ starts checking babies. The chips are not in the earliest developments, but when they run in on the older babies, they find the chip. Not only that, they find the chip is in all of the babies. Fives is horrified by this information. Lamassu shows up and tells Fives that the chip was made to keep the clones from being aggressive like Jango. It was Sifo Dyas, a Jedi, who told him to make the chip. Shaak Ti arrives with some clones, ordering Fives to drop his weapon when he takes Lamassu hostage. Fives and AZ give Shaak Ti all the evidence about the chip, and Fives says that if all the chips aren't removed, then the entire Republic army could be compromised. And Lamassu says that removing Tup's chip killed him, which could happen to other clones. She wants Fives terminated immediately, since he's now a threat without his chip. And Fives goes, I'm not a freaking power drill. I'm a living being with thoughts and feelings, bitch. And she calls him property and nothing more. But Shaak Ti is like, you're right. He is property of the Republic. I'll decide Fives' fate, you uppity long-necked jerk. And she gives the order for Fives to go with her to Coruscant. To talk to the Chancellor. Fives thanks her and allows himself to be taken into custody. And Fives and AZ say their goodbyes, and we're off to next week's episode where Fives will talk to Papa Palpatine.
Ooh.
I know, a little wink wink towards that. Something to look forward to. What do you think of this app?
This was, I like this a lot. My favorite part, the favorite part of the whole episode is the speech at the end about why they put the chip in, where she's sowing dissension between the clones and the Jedi, while lying a little bit, while weaving a little bit of the truth in, and giving them a good out to fuck with Fives, because she's saying, oh yeah, once you take the tumor out, you're violent like Jango.
Yeah, and here's Fives like freaking out,
and Fives is freaking out at that when she's saying, and he's got a gun to the, you know, he's got his hand around her neck and a gun to the back of her head or to her back, and is like ranting and raving. So it, you know, to all appearances from an outsider, it's like, yeah, he took out his, the thing that was keeping him from being a psychopath like Jango. But since we've seen Jango, he may be a psychopath, but he's not a ranting, raving psychopath. He was pretty calm, cool, and collected. So, but that's, that was just like, that was a very, like, the kind of intelligent, manipulative lie that you would expect from somebody like the way the Kaminoans have been turning out to be. So I really like that. There was the establishing shot was right out of the establishing shot of Kamino in episode 2, you know, with just like sort of approaching the buildings while there's Kaminoans riding on their on their birds. And there's even a, I believe Empire Strikes Back, there was a, was it, I think it was Shaak Ti that said, escape was never their intention, which is a Darth Vader line, I believe, from Empire Strikes Back. And I've got clone kids and clone babies. I like that they had some Boba age, well, probably a little younger than Boba age kids getting their school in. And then I was thinking Fives is probably, you know, Fives is probably feeling like we would if we walked into an elementary school going like, oh, geez, I remember this. I remember the smell of this room.
Yeah.
And my other note is just kind of a superficial one, is I think when they were the first shot of the clone baby slash embryo being put through the scanner was very much like the last scene in 2001 A Space Odyssey. So I think they were paying a little 2001 tribute there, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought this act put this episode into overdrive. Oh yeah, that's all I got, and I ain't got no more.
My first note is, oh my god, Fives, put on a helmet.
Yeah, right.
Like maybe like he can't with his little dome now sticking off the side of his head, but he can at least like. I would have at least liked a moment where he's trying to put on a helmet and he can't get it on, and then he's like, oh, I can't wear this. But other than that, it's like, you're walking through a room with Kaminoans knowing that you're on the loose and you're not wearing a helmet. Though, I have to say, though, because the person who voices AZ is the same person who voices Whack, and I like how they played it off him going, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, acting normal. And I'm like, it wasn't as bad as Whack because, like, Fives even goes, man, for you, that was normal. It's fine.
Yeah, robots shouldn't have any problem acting normal.
Yeah, if he would have just been like, just fly behind me and be quiet.
But fly behind like, me like a robot and don't say a word.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to disregard this note because it got resolved later on. I wrote, I wish Fives and Shaak Ti, because of their long history together, would sit down and talk with no one else there. But it kind of got resolved in the end, so it's fine. It's so weirdly unsettling not only seeing babies in tubes, but also seeing all these clone kids not having a good childhood.
Well, with just, I mean, as we've said many times before in the show, soon as you put any amount of thought and reflection into any aspect of the clone's life, it's kind of an abomination top to bottom, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And it's not like it's not like they're torturing them and doing experiments on them, but it's just sort of this mundane, you never get to have a real life, you know? Here are the kids, they're training, and you notice they don't show them, like, doing something fun, like playing games that improve your hand-eye coordination. They're just sitting in front of a screen, like, diddling on buttons. And you know, and they could have shown something like them playing space ball. But,
yeah.
You know, but no, and I like that they chose something a little more, you know, they showed them in class learning, doing their reading or something. But it was just like, man, yeah, you don't hear clones reminiscing about the good times at any point in their life, you know?
You know, I keep thinking back to, gosh, was it season 2, I think it is, where Boba is hiding out with a group of cadets and their ship gets attacked. There's some really nice moments there where the kids are, like, get to play on the guns to, like, practice firing lasers and stuff. And they're all excited. They're like, yeah, this is fun. We get to shoot stuff. But at the same time, it's still training them for war. So it's like, oh, they're kids training to go and die.
Yeah, and they at least have kid moments of even enjoying their training or stuff. But, yeah, but for
none
but,
of those children
but
are some smiling.
Of it is dehumanizing, you know?
Yeah, none of those little Boba Fett kids in the Zack were smiling.
I don't think any clones can go like most sentient beings that have like that live in like freedom can go like, yeah, you know, it wasn't like the good old days when we were little kids and had no responsibilities and were just sort of like going around having fun. That there's just never been any era of that. Probably the only era that they never felt it were when they were too young to even, you know, comprehend any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. My next note is, Fives has every single reason at this point to distrust the Jedi, because first there was everything with Krell, and now he finds out another Jedi, Sifo Dyas, is the one who ordered to have the chip put into be put into all the clones, and it makes sense why he would be so wary of these assholes.
Yeah, but at the end he sort of cheerily just like lies down on the stretcher and goes along.
I think it's because it's Shaak Ti. Like, Shaak Ti is still always the Jedi that has always been in Fives' corners. She was in his corner in the Clone Cadet episodes when he was training. Right. She helped give him his name. She always believed in the Domino Squad. When they came back to Kamino in season 3 to defend it, she recognized him. She was like, oh, you're great. You're back. I'm so proud of you. And he's like, oh, thanks, Mom. And
yeah, I would trust her, but I wouldn't let myself out of her sight after the brain wiping incident.
I think if she wasn't going, because she said, you're coming with me. I think if she was not going, he would not go either.
And I wonder why they did the scene. I mean, he'd had his brain surgery or something. Is that why they took him off on a stretcher, or to make it look less like he was? You would think he would be taken into custody, you know?
Even if she's just
taking him back, you know, he's still been sort of breaking the law, and you know, I don't know. It was just strange that he went off on a stretcher, you know.
I don't think so, because I mean, he did just have major brain surgery, and she's probably like, "You need to rest now, chill and relax, because you just had major surgery 5 minutes ago." So I also love so much about this act that Fives doesn't realize that he's fighting to stop Order 66.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not wrong when he says that if the chips are not removed from the clones, the entire Republic could be compromised. Like, he doesn't realize it. He's fighting to stop Order 66, and he doesn't know.
Yeah, because he's hitting the wider issue of it. Yeah, so he doesn't know the specifics, and it's like he's so close too, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, everything is so close to blowing it, which we know doesn't happen. But it's like it's a great story because you're just watching it going like, oh man, you know, there's just this much more real putting together of elements for them to really start figuring it out.
Yeah, which is my follow-up note, is with episode 3 around the corner, we know that things aren't going to go well.
right, yeah, we already know where it's going to go. But still, like, episode 3, I knew how episode 3 was going to go, and I got so wrapped up in it that I was, like rooting for Anakin not to turn at the end, knowing full well what was going on.
And I think that's part of the reason why this is so intriguing. It's not that we don't know that episode 3 is going to happen. It's we know it's going to happen. Will they figure it out?
Right.
So, and my last note is, I just really like Lamasu as a villain. You know, I think at this point,
yes,
like, she's working for the Separatists, but she's working for them as like a business matter. I don't think she actually believes in their ideals.
Yeah, I'm not sure she has many ideals really as such.
Yeah, like, this is all business to her, and I think, like, Darth Tyrannus is her employer, and not the, like, she plays that it's the Jedi and the Republic that's her employer, but she's just so good at weaving just such little things in between things.
Well, she's not 100% in on the game, but she's so much in on the game that, yeah, she can play along with, she's in on, like, some of the more, you know, Palpatine level behind the scenes action that it's kind of a little surprising that Dooku is in on. So, you know, I'm very surprised that she, not being a Sith, is actually in on so many levels of it. Although I guess if you were the Sith, you would still need somebody who knew what was going on those levels anyway.
You know, the Sith has been gone for so long during this time, and the Jedi are just now realizing that there are Sith back. Like, they're just now coming to that conclusion. Right. So I'm sure the general populace doesn't even know what a fucking Sith is. So probably to her, like, the name Darth Tyrannus is just his name, and that he's just an employer. Like, they're paying her. So I'm sure she probably doesn't even, A, care what a Sith is, B, know what a Sith is.
Oh, no. But I'm just saying, like, that the amount of the plan that she's in on, if I were the Sith, I would be keeping that, you know, the Sith be in Vegas. I would not let anything outside of the Sith storyline. You know what I mean?
What do you mean that being Vegas?
They're behind the scene machinations. She's like.
Do you mean like what happens in Vegas?
She can put together. She puts together. She knows a lot of. She knows that they have. That she knows. And they made sure to make sure that they said, you know, this is not going to affect Order 66. Is it? She's like, oh, no, Order 66 is fine. So she knows about Order 66. She knows what it is. She knows that the Jedi think that they're her boss, but they're not really her boss, but she has to play this to the Jedi. So she's really in on a lot of Palpatine's.
Well, they're calling it Protocol 66.
Huh?
They're calling it Protocol 66.
Right, right. So Dooku wasn't sitting there going, or Palpatine weren't going like, ah, yes, I was a coder back in the day. I will write the software to put on the chip, you know? Some Kaminoan had to, like, know that these guys might have to kill the Jedi at some point, which are supposed to be her, you know, she's pretending to be her employers. So knowing that information, if she studies up on the trade wars going on, she could put a lot together. And I think maybe Kaminoans just don't care, so they can tell her, but it's weird.
Actually, a couple episodes ago, they did mention that they made this protocol to stop rogue Jedi.
Right, but I don't know if that was the truth. You know, I think that they might have been, you know, purposely lying about that. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, with the Order 66, all it took was Palpatine to go, all the Jedi have gone rogue.
Right,
and the
clones
go, oh, rogue Jedi, let's kill them.
Well, no, yeah, that statement covers your ass, but I think she knew, if somebody's like, yeah, if a Jedi goes rogue, we have to have one of the clones be able to shoot that Jedi. And there's a big difference between that and, oh, shoot all the Jedi at once, you know? There's no real sort of, like, if it's one Jedi, that sort of sets up a little safety valve. So if they kill that one Jedi and find out that, like, you know, the Jedi didn't do anything wrong, it'll be a problem. They'd find Order 66 or something like that. So, I mean, I think she she doesn't know why Palpatine's doing it, but she knows the machinations of a lot of the stuff he's doing, and I think maybe that points to Kaminoans are so, like, maybe machine-like that Palpatine's like, I know that she's not going to have some moral crisis and go to the Jedi and say, look, guys are getting your chain yanked by, from her point of view, Darth Tyrannus.
Yeah.
So... She is in that position of knowing more about Dooku's plan than anybody who's not a Sith or a Sith apprentice.
I'm going to slightly disagree with you. Just slightly. Because we know that she was the head engineer on the cloning process.
Right.
So I think that she knows a lot more, but probably everybody else that works for her doesn't.
Oh, no, yeah. No, she is. Yeah, but, you know, she's a Kaminoan who's not a Sith. And that's just... It's just very, you know, she only knows that because she's the one person, you know, what they boiled it down to, who has to know it. But she's in that this unique position to where she's probably the most well-informed non-Sith person in the universe as to what's going on in this storyline.
Yeah.
And she's totally down with, you know, with, sucking up to the bad guy side of it. So it's very interesting. I love I love this episode. Her final speech is like the crowning. Her final speech. I had already had a score written down about 3/4 of the way through this episode, just sort of wrapping it up in my mind, and then her speech came along, and I'm like, I'm just gonna bump that up half a point.
Well, that's all I have for this episode. You ready to score it up now that we've talked forever?
I am, and now that I just talking scores, I gave it a 9. It probably would have been a 9.5. I think I docked it a half point instead, or I didn't dock it, but I didn't push it up to a 9.5 because of the little, you know, just some of the little details that were kind of wonky. But otherwise, I mean, and I want a little leeway to going forward too. But boy, this is full of relevance to the prequels and to the whole past of Clone Wars. It's and the stuff that happens in the future. It's just great, and I liked. We're on the third episode, and the first episode was like that. And a lot of times with an arc like this, like early on, one of the early episodes will peak with that sort of vibe to it, you know, that I just described. And this one, it's been etching up each one, you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it just keeps getting more relevant, and it keeps getting a little darker at every turn, which it should.
Yeah.
I'm a happy, happy season 6 newbie.
Well, I'm going to agree with you. I love this episode. It's so jam-packed. Again, Fives just shows everything I love about him and what makes up all the clones and why I love the clones. And the drama of fighting the chip is great because there's not a lot of action in the show outside of Act 1. But the pace never stops.
No.
And, yeah. I mean, the first scene is, the first act is where all the action is. Other than that, it's just Fives, sneaking around and running away and sneaking around and running away and just being like, oh, medical jargon. But it never lets up, and it's really good. And Llama Sue is a really good villain in all this, and I'm glad that Shaak-Ti is starting to kind of finally get on top of everything a little bit. And plus, I just really love Fives and AZ's friendship, and it's great. So I also gave it a 9 out of 10.
Excellent. I'm really excited to see where it's going next weekend. I'm even more excited that you've mentioned that Palpatine's going to be part of it.
Next week is the final episode of this arc.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, Sabotage. Or Sabotage.
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 All right. Okay. Sit back. This is a long one. It's from Patrick Delmore. The exposition episode. Sorry, I got to start that again. The, quote, exposition in episode 2 is important, Arch. Arch.
I think it's art.
Those quotes were messing me up. Yeah, yeah, yes. That is part of the enhancement. Is a lot of exposition that you pick up in the prequels does get fleshed out in Clone Wars. But I like how it's fleshed out. So It's a good joke, Delmore. But it's still important, man.
So candy.
You know what else is important?
Candy.
Candy's not just important, it's kind of vital.
In case you don't know, Chris hates American Kit Kats, so our friend Dario Gonzalez sends us candy from all over the world for us to review here on the show. And this week, we are doing the Cadbury Twirl, made in Ireland.
With lots of Arabic writing on it. On the back.
Oh,
it says, the intense chocolate hit.
Whoa.
This better
There's
hit
two
me
in
with
here.
Oh, it looks like Kit Kats.
I know.
Oh, dear God. It's Irish Kit Kats, but Cadbury Kit Kats. Okay.
Oh, my God. There's no wafer.
Oh, it's the chocolate.
All the way through. Wow, that's sweet.
It is an intense chocolate hit. It's just, that was really disconcerting because you expect a crunch, and it's and it's not just like a solid block of chocolate. It's that airy. It's got lots of air bubbles in it, so it's like light and.
I don't know. I feel like it needs a wafer.
Well, I always feel like it needs a wafer.
Everything needs a wafer.
Yeah, I like these. I have to eat them slowly because they are intense chocolate hits.
This is really
good. It's not the chocolate that's too intense for me. It's the amount of sugar. But it's that kind where you bite into it and you go, oh, this is like dryness, you know. This is dried out or something, but it isn't. It's like tiny little layers. So it crumbles. But then it hits your tongue and it starts to melt and go, and you're like, ooh, this feels dry.
There that was really sweet. I cannot eat both of these.
Oh, I'm eating half of one. And then I'll probably eat the other half in the morning before I go to work.
Well, thank you, Daria. We love you. Well, that's all I have. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. Ah, the home of all the Two True Freaks podcasts. Atop the mountaintop, where we all gather and make our podcasts. And then we drink. We drink Saurian brandy, and then we sit around a giant chessboard where we manipulate the machinations of humankind with our podcasts about Star Trek and Star Wars and wrestling and
comics,
horror movies and Doctor Who and comics, lots of comics,
movies and Jaws.
And Jaws. And I found out that I have, and I would send it to Paul BT, Paul from Back to the Bins. And is it the author and creator of Is It Jaws? You know those Billy Bass singing fish?
Yeah.
I found one, although it's just too dirty and beat up, you know, to send someone as a gift. They made a Jaws one. That goes bum 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 and flips around and like his mouth opens and stuff. And I thought I'd like to send that to Paul, but it looks like it's been laying in somebody's dirty backyard with the dog pooping on it for the last couple years. But hey, it's nice to know it exists and that I had it in my garage. You can also find us on Facebook, the Two True Freaks main page on Facebook, where we release all our episodes and provide links to everything that comes out. And sort of will point you in the direction of all the other podcasters' Facebook pages and the Two True Freaks Cantina, which is our cantina where everybody goes to mingle and do the things that you do on the internet, but not all the things that you do on the internet. Please use your discretion. Where can they find you? Oh, wait. I'm not done yet. Shit, I'm trying to weedle right out of my responsibilities. We're also on Twitter. Two True Freaks on Twitter. How could I forget Gene, the podcasting machine? And speaking of dancing machines, I just found out the Gong Show is back on the air.
Really?
And it's been on for 2 seasons. And get this. The host is this... famous old British guy, you know, who was like a host of British TV shows that nobody'd ever heard of. And come to find out, it's actually Mike Myers of Austin Powers fame in heavy makeup has been doing the without any credit on the show for like the last couple years.
Ha!
So
that's awesome.
I have to see that.
Ha.
Yep. And I'm wondering if they have a new version of Gene the Dancing Machine. I hope not. You cannot replace the original Gene the Dancing Machine. Speaking of cannot be replaced, where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account, and you can also find me at Hope Mullinex. I also write Thrawn fan fiction on AO3, which is short for Archive of Our Own. My fan fiction is called Forces of Gravity. And my name on there is Chaos Lydia, and I'm also beta reading my best friend's book, a fanfic called Valkyrie Strike, and it's also a Thrawn fanfiction. So if you want to check out some of my writing, you can hit me up on there.
Leave me a kudos or a comment. I think you should name the new genre Thran fiction.
Thran?
Thran fiction.
For
Thrawn fanfiction.
Thrawn fiction. Oh, I see what you're saying. I thought you were making a ship name for, like, Anakin and Thrawn.
I was trying to make my bad pun that would get back in your bad pun, but I failed.
I don't know. Megan wrote a hilarious, like, joke fanfiction called Gibbs Bad Day, where it's Thrawn and Vader in a compromising situation, and it's hilarious. So, but, yeah. All right, well, that's all I have. This was a long episode. We changed it in a lot.
I know it's one of our shorter notes of all time, but there you go.
Yeah, but a lot of our notes were big notes, and plus we did tangent a lot, so.
Yes, we did. We had some important things to talk about.
Aw, and next week, you're going to get to see drunk dancing clones in a bar. So that's something to look forward to.
Excellent.
Yeah, you'll get to see him, too.
Is Tarkin going to be, like, up in the, you know, like, upper-tier balcony, just like, bring me him?
No.
Yes.
No. I thought your accident was Palpatine. I was like, he's in next week's episode, too. All right, you guys. See you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Sorry, I really have to pee.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Two True Freaks has been brought to you today by Damanzo Core of Milan, Italy, and by the letters F and U.